National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. My name is Bernice Herzog. My respondent's name is Mitchell Bork. This is Thursday, April 29, 1999. Mr. Bork, could you tell us your birthday, please?
Can I invoke the Fifth Amendment? March 23, 1919.
Good. Now, let's start way back. Tell me about your grandparents. Do you know your grandparents?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Let's take the maternal side.
All right.
First. Tell me about your grandparents.
Okay, the maternal grandparents, my maternal grandmother came from Lithuania, from a town which was called Ponyvesh.
Can you spell it?
P-O-N-I-E-W-I-E-R-Z.
Okay.
All right. And her father supposedly was a rabbi.
Beg pardon? Did you say he was a rabbi?
Supposedly.
Oh, as far as she knew.
As far as I was told. And my grandfather came from a town, small town, near Vitebsk, Witebsk, which is presently in Belarus. Yeah. And where they met, I don't know. And then they lived in Russia. And they lived in Moscow until after the First World War, when they moved to Warsaw in Poland. They also lived in Warsaw before the war, First World War, I think around 1905 or so.
They have children?
They had two daughters. Mm-hmm. One was my mother, the older one, and the younger was, I suspect, about 4 or 5 years younger. And she lived with them. My mother got married in 1913.
What is the name of your aunt?
My aunt's name was Runia, R-U-N-I-A.
And did she remain in Europe?
No, she came to the United States in 1934 and married my uncle in Chicago.
His name?
His name was Nathan Taflov, T-A-F-L-O-V-E, and he was also from Poland. He came in 1913, I think, to the States from from a small town near Grodno, which was called Krynki, K-R-Y-N-K-I.
And what was his profession, or where?
He came to the States as a boy of about 13, 14, went to school.
What year, approximately?
1913. And he was a very capable young man, and he picked up English so well that he spoke without an accent. He went into the army in 1917, was shipped to France, but didn't fight. The armistice came around. And then, after he returned to the States, he went to a law school, not at a university, I think it was Marshall Law School or something in Chicago, and worked for a bank in Chicago, the Schiff's Bank. The Schiff's were, I understand, big Jewish philanthropists and bankers and so on and so on. And when the war ended in Europe and the people from here started sending money to their poor relatives in Eastern Europe, he was sent by the bank as a head of their office in Warsaw. And knowing English, Russian, Polish, and Yiddish, he did very well as the manager, traveling around and you know, and so on. So as a young man of about 20-something.
Now, your parents.
Yeah.
When did they come to this country? Were they married?
They didn't come to this country.
Oh, they didn't?
No, they never came to this country because they remained in Poland. My father fought in the 1939 campaign against the Germans. He was a surgeon, quite well-known surgeon in Warsaw, by the name of Borkowski. And after the campaign, he returned to Warsaw, was in the ghetto, was the head of the surgical department and the Jewish hospital in the ghetto, in the Warsaw ghetto, and both of them were taken to Majdanek concentration camp and disappeared. But I came to this country because of the assistance of my aunt and uncle.
Now, I think you said your father's name was something else, and yours is a shortened form.
Correct. The name was Borkowski.
Oh, that's a good short name.
Yeah.
And
he was a surgeon.
He was
a surgeon, yeah.
Now, still going in the background, you say you heard that your great-grandfather was a rabbi? Or your grandfather?
He was my great-grandfather.
And he was a rabbi?
Yeah.
Okay. Therefore, I assume that the family was fairly religious.
At that time, yes. I would say yes, yes.
Were you bar mitzvahed?
Yes, I was.
And what were conditions, let's say, from the time that you were a little boy until your bar mitzvah?
Well, these were the conditions in the early 20s in Poland. So it was, you know, there was a depression in the beginning and so on. Then my father worked in the hospital. The times where I was born, it was pretty rough in there, as I gather. But then things improved. And after 1926, when there was the coup d'etat by Marshal Piłsudski, things have relatively improved in terms of attitudes toward the Jews.
That's what I was trying to say.
But in the beginning, it was democracy. It was, free for all. There was and there wasn't anti-Semitism, because I suspect that's what interests you. There was a group of Jews in the Jewish society who were assimilated. My family was assimilated. The Borkowskis were assimilated. On my mother's side, the grandparents at home, they spoke Russian. The grandfather never learned Polish. They spoke Russian or Yiddish. With my parents, they spoke Russian. I never learned Yiddish. I had a Hebrew tutor just for the bar mitzvah, because my maternal grandparents, they were religious. They weren't Orthodox. They just observed. The house was kosher, but we had ham on glass plates, separate, knives, forks, and so on. There were pork chops fried in butter. Even fried in my aunt, the one who came to States, was. And what else? She couldn't stand vegetable fat.
Now, the aunt.
Yeah, the one who came here.
That brought you.
Yeah.
Was she kosher?
No.
So, as you were growing up, you weren't growing up as an Orthodox Jew.
No. As an assimilated, yeah.
Let's go back to your school days.
Mm-hmm.
We touched on anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any conflict with any of your friends? Did they call you dirty Jew?
No. I went to a government, to a municipal high school, because the hospital where my father worked was a city hospital. So I could go to a city school, and there was none of it.
Pre-high school?
It was a pre, yeah, it was elementary and high school.
Oh, okay.
Both. Yeah, it was both of them, and I think it was free. It must have been free, but also there were this particular school. There were six municipal schools in Warsaw. Five were for men, and one was for women. All right, and ours was number one. There were, you know, one, two, three, four, and so on. This was number one. It had a name after a Polish hero. But...
was it number one because it was the best?
It was number one municipal, and it was also very good. It was an excellent. Number one among the municipal schools, it was one of the two top schools in the country. The second one was a government school. And the principal and the teachers didn't tolerate anti-Semitism. What do you mean later on? Like after the Marshall died, when the trend became more and more nationalistic because of Hitler in Germany. But not, when I went to school, I still correspond with one of my colleagues, who's alive. When I go to Poland, to Warsaw, we used to meet at the homeroom teachers for tea. And she just died last July at the age of 104 years. And there would be the seven of us would meet with different political views. And there were discussions, and she was a great lady, frail, of course, but her mind was just as clear as a whistle. It was nothing. I was one of the boys, that's it.
Now, your mother, I assume, was a housewife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Had no outside interest.
No, well, she had outside interest, but she was not a professional person.
Not community?
No.
Now, you came here as
mm-hmm.
a young man,
mm-hmm.
and you lived where, in Chicago?
I lived for 9 months about, or five months, in Silver Spring, near Washington, in Maryland, with my aunt and uncle. And then I moved to Chicago because I got into the university, into the University of Illinois College of Pharmacy.
And what year was that?
That was September 1947.
Now,
and I lived in Chicago for 10 years. I went to undergraduate and graduate.
Now, in your college experience,
mm-hmm.
did you find any anti-Semitism?
No.
You had mixed friends.
Oh, sure. Remember, 1947, there were many, many GIs. So it was a very interesting group. My best friend was a former pilot who had a nervous breakdown for flying missions over the Pacific. No, none of that.
Now, you said you were...
For example, at the present time, here in Pittsburgh, we moved to Pittsburgh in 1957, and I have a group of friends. Of course, I know many American friends, but I have a group of Polish friends, and they know I am Jewish. I suspect they know, and there's no problem. From time to time, when they had the old pastor in the Polish church in Lawrenceville, from time to time on Sunday I would go to a mass just to see the old man who was from the Holy Ghost Father's order, you know, Duquesne University, that's right. And then there was a young priest from Poland, and we became very friendly, and they would come here.
Yeah.
No problem.
Very good. When you went to school,
mm-hmm.
you had lots of friends, I'm talking about in this country.
When I went to school here, yeah,
the
okay.
University.
Yeah.
Did any of your friends become luminaries of any kind, also professors, somebody that you were close to?
Yes. Yes,
know?
All right. One of them became also, he was, in college with me, but a year or 2 years later. And he became also doctorate in pharmaceutics. And then he came to Duquesne also, on my recommendation, and he became eventually the assistant dean of pharmacy.
And what was his name?
Galinsky, Dr. Alvin Galinsky.
Spell it, please.
Galinsky. And now he's retired in Florida. And the dean was also my friend from the graduate school at Illinois, yeah, Dr. John Adams, who was the dean here at Duquesne for a number of years and who brought me here.
Let's go back just a wee bit.
Yeah.
In your early days, you were bar mitzvahed.
Yeah.
But did you go to religious school, Sunday school?
No.
Did they have them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You didn't.
I didn't, no. And as a matter of fact, I have to to admit that my father didn't come to my bar mitzvah.
Must have been a reason?
No, just he didn't. But it was arranged by my maternal grandfather, and it was for him. Because if not, he was my bosom friend. He was the best friend. And if not for him, I probably wouldn't have the bar mitzvah or wouldn't do it.
Now,
yeah.
You are married, were married.
Mm-hmm.
What year did you get?
We got married in 1949.
In this country, of course.
In this country, yeah.
And what is your wife's name?
Helene, H-E-L-E-N-E.
And her maiden name?
Fink, F-I-N-K-E. And she's a professional. She lives in Pittsburgh. We keep in touch. And she's a professional, she's a psychologist.
And she's in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Also. Mm-hmm. And you have children?
Yeah, we have two daughters.
And their names?
The older one is Louise.
Yes. Is she married?
She is married and has three children.
Who is she married to?
She is married to, financial entrepreneur. Something like that.
His name?
Gerald Brecher, B-R-E-C-H-E-R. He has a law degree, but I don't think he practiced law at any time. That's her second husband. Her first husband, with whom she has two children, and one child was the second one. Her first husband was of Italian extraction, and he's a dentist, also in Massachusetts.
Oh, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they live in Massachusetts.
Your daughter?
The older one.
Yes. Yeah.
And the younger one is a professional woman. She never married. Both of them graduated from Wharton School of Business. The older one went into finance, and she's with the State Street Bank in Boston. And the younger one got an additional degree in law, and she is presently the legal counsel of the television division of National Geographic.
Yeah.
So if you subscribe to National Geographic, and you will look at the masthead, or whatever it's called, the page, you know, with the names, you will see her name in the television division.
And her name?
Susan Bork. Mm-hmm.
Did you and your wife keep what kind of Jewish life did you have as a couple?
No particular one. We had Jewish friends and non-Jewish friends, but no kosher.
Children go to Sunday school of any kind?
No, they didn't, except now the older ones' children go to a Sunday school because her husband, Gerald, comes from a Reconstructionist family. His grandfather, I think, was the founder of the Reconstructionist movement. So they go to a Sunday school. Well, you know, that's their...
Her first husband was Italian.
Yeah.
And she had two children with him.
Mm-hmm.
What, I guess they didn't practice?
They didn't practice, no. His family didn't practice anything either.
Right. Now, those two children,
Girls
or boys?
The older one is a girl, and she is 12 years old. And the boy is 10, and the boy is a Down
syndrome,
but in a relatively mild thing.
Now, from the second husband...
There is a girl.
And how old is she?
She is 8. She will be 8 in May.
Now, this marriage is Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't... observe anything either?
I am laughing because when you say Jewish, when I wrote to my cousin in Poland at that time when they got married, that they were married by a woman rabbi, my cousin still cannot understand it. And she is married to a Pole. Yeah, but what did you say? Whether they keep kosher?
No, any type of...
Oh, they belong to a synagogue. Yeah, they belong to a synagogue, and they go, you know, like most of the Jews, for high holidays. Yeah, and as far as kosher, well, they don't eat pork. They don't. My son-in-law eats lobster and shrimp. And I called him on this thing. I said, well, what kind of a kosher is that? He says that his being kosher ends at the edge of the sea.
Oh, that's good.
As long as there is an excuse.
When you were growing up, were you active in any sports? Did father...
Oh, sports? No, God forbid. I almost ended up with a failing grade in gym on my graduation certificate, which would have been a disaster. Just like a low grade in religion, by the way. I don't know if you know that. But in Poland, you had to have a good grade in religion, any religion, and the graduation certificate, which was a big thing, in order to get into a university. And, of course, a failing grade in gym, well, forget it. You could go and dig ditches. Oh, yeah. So I had to kind of finagle getting out of that business, out of gym.
How did you meet your wife?
At a party. I think that the hostess knew her from their graduate studies at the University of Chicago. And being a nice Jewish friend, she decided that my wife should get married to a nice fellow. And she had the party, and that's how we met.
Now,
there was not Yente the matchmaker.
What was her background, religious-wise, your wife's?
Her mother came from a Orthodox family which immigrated from Hungary, and I met her mother's sister, and the two women, well, all right, I understand that the father, that means my former wife's maternal grandfather, was widowed, and being a good Jew, he married a sister. And my mother-in-law never forgave him this thing, so she rejected everything that was Jewish. I think if she could put, you know, back the circumcision, she would do that too. But she rejected everything. And they didn't keep kosher. My father-in-law came from a very assimilated family. I think that his parents had a theater outfits rental business in New York. All right. So they were very much into theater and so on. One brother-in-law was a ophthalmologist. One brother was a very big and well-known CPA in New York. And there were, I think, two sisters who were teachers. My mother-in-law was a teacher, so that was a very, you know, educated and assimilated family.
Now, where did your wife go to school?
She went to the, what was it, College of the City of New York or something, or
CCNY, something.
And then she went to the University of Chicago, and there she got her PhD in psychology.
Where did you and your wife live when you first got married?
In Chicago.
And did she come to Pittsburgh with you?
That's correct, yes. I got, after my graduate studies, I got a job here at Duquesne University in 57.
1957.
Yeah, and we came here.
Mm-hmm. Did you have your two daughters at that time?
One was born in Chicago, the older one. She was born in 55. And the younger one is a Pittsburgher, yes. She was born at McGee Hospital.
What year was that?
She was born in 1959.
In your household, your wife and your two children, did you practice any kind of Judaism?
No.
Anything? The girls did not go to Sunday school. Did they ever complain to you about any anti-Semitism or...
No.
Didn't they know that you were Jewish?
Oh, sure. They knew, and they didn't know. They didn't encounter anything.
Mr. Bork, would you contrast the differences in health services in Pittsburgh with what you found or what you remember in Poland?
Well, the first of all, there was no, there was the so-called Kasa Chorych, which was people had certain, and I don't know the details of it, they were insured. But most of the people went to private physicians. They, I don't know whether, in other words, who paid the premiums, and whether private physicians were getting something out of that insurance company, I don't think so. I know that my aunt, who worked as a secretary, was in that insurance group. But I have never heard my father getting any money from them, and he was a surgeon. So there was private, it was private, pay as you go.
Do you know what motivated your grandparents to leave Lithuania, go to Russia?
Well, I have no idea, really, but I guess there were, you can close, there were greater possibilities, I suspect, in Russia.
Okay. Then
but I have no idea.
What made them go from Russia to Poland?
Well, there was, you know, Poland was under Russian occupation at that time, so that was basically like being in the same country. I think there was less of a difficulty for a businessman in Poland than in occupied Poland than in Russia itself. And of course you know quite well that there was the Pale in Russia, and they were trying to push the Jews into Poland, which Russia considered a colony. And as I think I mentioned last time, the Fiddler on the Roof is all about it and perfect example of it. The Jews probably would have lived in those villages with if the government would not interfere with it. It was to a large extent a government-sponsored anti-Semitism.